was number two in Australia. And the skill set that I actually was able to develop, that I was very cognizant of what I was doing and very aware of what I was trying to achieve. I did that without any referrals from, or very few referrals from within the bank. And they asked me one day why, and I said, because I live or die on my own efforts.
On Property Investory, we'll discover Kevin Lee's road to becoming a property investor, rife with horror stories including greasy motorcycles and years of rebuilding. Despite the drawbacks, Lee has become a reliable and successful property advisor with years of finance experience under his belt.
Welcome to Property Investory, the podcast that goes behind the scenes of property investing stories. Here's your host, Tyrone Shum.
Lee's business, Smart Property Advisor, helps people to achieve their goals and sets them on the right path towards their own successful property investment ventures.
I help people to achieve their dreams or their goals as far as being a property investor is concerned. So my client base, my ideal client, if you like, are the people who want to start but don't know who to trust, don't know where to, you know, where to go for knowledge. So especially the trust factor is a big one. You know, the whole property investment field or sector is filled with spivs and spruggers and crooks and charlatans. And I set Smart Property Advisor up to be able to provide, you know, property advice they could trust.
Yeah. And that's what makes you stand out as well too, because, you know, it's so hard to find great trustworthy advisors to be able to guide people on the journey, because property investing itself is a personal journey and also a very big investment on a lot of behalf to be able to get there too. And it's also a long process. So you want to be there in for the long haul.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. It's such an important part of somebody's life if they choose to take that next step. They might have bought their own home, you know, 5, 10, 20 years ago. They might be at a certain age group or in that certain age group where they need to think about their future. And if they don't get the education or have somebody holding their hand, they can make such financially fatal mistakes that it's just some of the people I've had to help along the way, it's pretty tragic.
Lee says that his passion for finance and investments gave him the drive to embark on his business venture in recent years, creating a successful franchise from his experience in the finance sector.
It's my passion and it's what gets me up every morning. If you want a little bit of the journey, I started out as a retail trainee, retail management for a long, long time, jumped across to the finance sector probably 23 or 24 years ago with a major one of the big four banks. Found my why while I was in a bank. That's pretty hard to even imagine that somebody could find their why working for a bank, but I did. And I was able to take that that knowledge and that expertise that I'd created and leave that bank 18 years ago and craft a very successful franchise in the finance world.
Fantastic.
And an offshoot of that became Smart Property Advisor about 5 years ago, 4.5 years ago.
As an investor, Lee doesn't agree with negatively geared investing, as he believes it is more important to have an income and support yourself rather than support your tenants' lifestyles.
I don't think negative gearing is the smartest thing that most people can actually do. And I explain negative gearing as pretty much supporting your tenant's lifestyle, because that's what you do.
Mm.
You know, you put your hand in your pocket on a monthly basis to support your tenant's lifestyle rather than your own. And when you think about it, that's the life of most negatively geared investors. And I'd probably take that a next step and say it might also be one of the reasons that most negatively geared investors stop at one or two properties. So they're punting on the future capital growth rather than the future income. And when I'm talking to clients, I ask this simple question. So when you go to the whichever grocery store you do your shopping at on a weekly or whenever basis, the girl at the checkout, I usually say the checkout chick, but that's a bit, yeah, demeaning. But having an ex-retail background, I can say it because it's not. The checkout chick doesn't say, Mr. Shum, could you give me some of your capital growth to pay for that trolley full of goods? They ask for some of your income. And most people are convinced or seduced or incorrectly advised that they should be investing for capital growth, because that's the number one name of the game, when in fact it isn't. We live off income now and we live off income when we retire, and that's the retirement phase that is the scariest bit, because right now we're talking, you know, 2017, only 6% of retirees in Australia are self-funded. The other 94% rely on either the full or part age pension to survive.
Growing up, Lee didn't learn about property investing from his parents, as they were from a generation which wasn't aware of those strategies. However, Lee says that he learned from mistakes by becoming employed at ANZ and was able to transfer his people skills across to that industry.
So I grew up in Westmead, you know, which is a little suburb of Parramatta, so Western Suburbs kid. I grew up in a housing commission, or ex-housing commission home that my parents bought, worked hard to pay off. And went to Parramatta Marist out there at Westmead as well. My dad worked really hard as a self-employed wall and floor tiler. In the last few years, I've reflected back to find out why I actually have been able to achieve what I've done. And I put a lot of credit back onto what I guess he did. And without knowing, I sort of was able to copy some of his skills, I guess. My parents were just typical, you know, 1950s and 1960s parents who didn't know anything about property, didn't know anything about investing. All they knew was that they buy a place and pay it off over the 20 or 30 years that the bank said so, if they lasted that long. And unfortunately, both my parents died at fairly early ages, so they never got to pay off their home. We didn't know much about property when that happened, and we sold it probably 6 to 8 months after my dad passed away. And we sold that house for $57,000. That would have been in 1979. That house, if we owned it today, even though it's still the same three-bedroom ex-housing commission house, it would sell for $1.5 million.
Ouch.
So there's been capital growth, which is not deserved by anybody that's been living in the house or owned it, because it's just happened. That's the result of an entirely different generation being active, and that's the baby boomers, of which I'm one. So the baby boomers have done lots of things. By default, they're the largest income earners in Australia's history. They're also the largest acquirers of multiple assets in Australia's history. Yeah, so they've been doing stuff, and it's created this whole wave of automatic capital growth. But anyway, so that was childhood. Went to Parramatta Marist, did all this stuff, joined the retail industry, had a lot of fun there, got bored with it. Went to ANZ as a mature age trainee. So when I was 40, I joined the bank as a trainee, which is an unusual term. But what I did know was a lot about people. I had people skills. I had the ability to think and work in the business area and transfer that into a bank. What I didn't know much was about money. So I'd already bought a business and gone broke at that stage because it was based on fraudulent numbers. Didn't do my due diligence anywhere near enough, obviously, and had to start again. So by 41, I started again.
Lee states that although he would have had other opportunities, he chose to work at the bank to absorb as much information about investing and finance as possible.
I figured that because I'd sent myself broke and had no clue what, you know, I was doing really in that particular foray into business, that I knew a lot about people, I knew a lot about business, but obviously knew nothing about money. And I figured that the major bank was probably a good place to go and learn about money. And I was right, I did. So I was able to bring those skills in, take a massive pay cut to go and join a bank. But very rapidly, I just became a sponge for every bit of knowledge that I could get from them. Well, at ANZ, I ended up going through from being a branch manager to a business development manager in a unit called Small Business and Professional Banking that was based in the CBD of Sydney, where we had to go out and find new business for the bank in that particular segment. So either new small business clients or professionals, you know, senior execs, etc. I was quite successful at that. I was number two in Australia. And the skill set that I actually was able to develop, that I was very cognizant of what I was doing and very aware of what I was trying to achieve, I did that without any referrals from, or very few referrals from within the bank. And they asked me one day why. And I said, because I live or die on my own efforts. And because I did that and the other guys who were doing the same role didn't, when I left, I was able to go off and take a big step and back myself because I had the connections and the contacts and the skill set to continue that. Whilst I was at BDM, I became the face, the unofficial face of the bank in the franchise sector because I'd identified that they had no presence in franchising in Australia. So I put together the policy or the seed capital of the policy document they needed to create in order to be able to lend to the franchise sector. And I'm quite proud to say that that same policy still runs today, and that's 18 years later. So I was very successful there. I became the face of franchising for them, and I was introduced to a brand new startup called Smartline, which was a finance startup. Our state manager at ANZ wanted to take a license over the Smartline software, and he took me out to see it, and I went home that night and said to my wife, I said, honey, stuff ANZ, I'm going to take a franchise in this new outfit because I can see that's the future. I stayed with ANZ for about another 8 months whilst I got the policy to the point where I could hand it over to somebody to take it and run with it at ANZ, and then I left and went into my my Smartline franchise.
It was a gradual process for Lee to begin investing in property, as he was required to go through the bank's staff lending department. This proved to be a minor setback in his bid to become a property investor.
I started in property before I got into the franchise. So while I was a BDM, I got into my first couple of properties. I went to when you work for a bank, you had to go through their staff lending. And the staff lending manager, in fact, declined my application to go and buy my first investment property because he said, you don't earn enough. And I said, that's not my fault. That's your fault.
Blame the banks.
Yeah, well, he said, but you don't earn enough. You just simply don't earn enough to buy a property that's negatively geared. And I said, well, they are all negatively geared. And he said, well, they are. Mm. I said, so you're telling me I can't go forward because your rules say that I don't earn enough when, in fact, yeah, I earned just enough to probably be able to buy one property that was negatively geared. So I'm not sure how long it took me, but it took me probably 3 to 6 months to figure out that there was another way and that if I bought properties that weren't negatively geared, I'd be able to go forward. So I ended up buying 3 properties on the one weekend in Brisbane, probably, as I said, 6 months after that first conversation. I bought them fairly cheaply. The three of them totaled about $250,000, $300,000 back then. That was 1997, I think it was. And I went to the staff lending manager and said, here you go, I want to buy these 3 properties as investments. And he looked at it and he said, you can't do that. I said, why? He said, because you can't buy properties like that. Where are they? You can't find them. They're all paying for themselves. I said, that's exactly right.
On one hand, it tells you that you can't borrow, and the next minute they're saying that you can't do it. What is wrong with the people there?
Well, they got no clue. So he approved me for those 3, and that was the start of it. So that was against the equity. By that time, I'd also bought the worst house in one of the better suburbs. So in West Pennant Hills, I bought the worst house in the suburb, not the street, the whole suburb. And we'd renovated that. So there was some equity that I built in there, and we were able to use that as the leapfrog into the first 3 properties.
Coming up after the break, we'll delve into Kevin Lee's reasons for investing into property.
Property is real. It's called real estate. So it's got some value within the Australian psyche. It's also got some value in real terms.
He tells us some of his worst property investing stories.
By that time, I'd also bought the worst house in one of the better suburbs. So in West Pennant Hills, I bought the worst house in the suburb, not the street, the whole suburb.
And that's up next. I'm Tyrone Sharp, and you're listening to Property Investory. Hey, podcast listeners, are you enjoying listening to these stories? If you are, then subscribe to Property Investory on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Simply visit likemypodcast.com to subscribe today. Lee expands more about purchasing the worst house in Northwest Sydney, from a motorcycle in the lounge room to books on witchcraft in the bedroom.
It was a horror. it was just a tragic house, you know, that had been neglected for probably 10 years and tenants in there. The type of tenant was the ones who had their Harley in the lounge room and were rebuilding with no drop sheets. So that was just straight oil and grease onto the floor, etc. There were cloaks. There was a cloak, a black cloak in the wardrobe in the main bedroom with a book on, witchcraft. That's it, that stuff. There was some blood around and things like that. There were holes in the walls. It was a bit over a third of an acre block in West Pennant Hills, very steep site, overgrown, like you couldn't see any of the boundaries on the property. But I picked it up for $208,000, so, because no one else would buy it. I let it go to auction. No one showed up. I knew that they wouldn't because it was scary. And then we negotiated after the auction to take it. And again, that's all I could afford. You know, I could afford somewhere out in further in the hills, you know, maybe Kellyville at that time for $210,000, or this much bigger block and a tragic house that I could get my teeth into and renovate, which is what I did. It took me 18 months to renovate. I sold it probably 5 or 6 years ago. So I missed this current boom, but we did pretty well out of it anyway, so I'm not complaining.
Lee's decision to invest in property, in opposition to other investment vehicles, was based on tangibility and the ability to control how you manage it.
Property is real. It's called real estate. So it's got some value within the Australian psyche. It's also got some value in real terms. The worst thing that can happen to a property is it can drop in value. It rarely will drop to zero, as opposed to shares that are just a piece of paper. And depending on what the managing director does with his personal assistant or executive assistant, the value of that share can drop dramatically, including to zero, through no fault of yours. And you have no control over that. You have all the control in the world over your own property, but you have no control over the shares you own in a company.
Mm. Just like how you can take a really run-down property and turn it into something that's much better and a lot more beautiful than it was before.
Yeah, one of the things I do when I'm educating my clients about that type of security and why is this. You know, having worked in a bank, you get to learn a lot. They take 3 types of security when they're lending you money. And the first one is shares. They'll lend you what's called, they could lend you money on what's called a margin loan. You're probably familiar with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you buy commercial property, they'll lend you money against that property. If you buy residential property, they'll lend you money against that. The margin loan is the highest interest rate out of all 3. It's also got the lowest, lowest appeal to the bank. So the maximum, if you went to any of the major 4 banks and said, I want to buy some of your shares on a margin loan, the maximum LVR that they'll lend you is 70%. So they'll lend between 20 and 70% depending on the share and what they think of that particular company. So of their own shares, they don't think enough to give you more than 70%. And the interest rate today is around the 9% mark on those. Could be a bit lower now, but I haven't looked for a long time. So 70% maximum. If you go and buy commercial property, they'll lend you 65%. That's their comfort range, but they will go up to 80% for good clients. That means good clients who have got plenty of cash flow and plenty of other asset backing. They'll lend you 80% on the proviso that you drop that to 70% in the short term. So in other words, a fairly rapid debt reduction program as part of the plan. The interest rate on that anywhere between 5 and 7.5 at the moment. Residential property, they used to, up until recently, lend you 95% and you could get that at 3.7% interest rate. So the banks know their game. Their game is to make money. They're pretty good at that in this country, Tyrone, by the way.
Yeah, I agree.
The net profit after tax this year was about $31 billion between just the top 4.
Lee's worst investing moment was paramount, holding the record for the largest mediation hearing in Queensland Supreme Court history.
Yeah, I speculated on some land in North Queensland. And it was, we did our research. It was a good bet. But when you do that sort of thing, when you speculate, you have no control over what could happen outside of your sphere of influence. And when you're buying vacant land off the plan, which is what we did, and you've got no control over weather or other global financial circumstances, you can get hammered. And we certainly got hammered. There was very, very little vacant land. It was Airlie Beach. At the time in 2003, 2004, there were very few vacant blocks of land available for sale and nothing being developed. So we were ahead of our time. The developer was a publicly listed company from WA. They said they had a good track record on being able to develop and deliver. We took them at their word because they're publicly listed, didn't know enough about them to question that. We bought well. We bought for 250 a block, 250 grand. These were all part acreage, so between half an acre and 1.5 acres. They had spent 5 years fighting council through the Land and Environment Court up there in Queensland to get this development over the line. It was 38 acres. They originally went for 170 block subdivision. They owned 88 acres. What they got approved in court was 38 acres and 17 blocks. So the government and the council took a zero off the end, and that was only on the proviso that they donated the 50 acres back to State Forest. So they lost 50 acres and 153 blocks in the process. They were over it, absolutely over it. And I knew this because it's a little bit of inside knowledge. And we made them an offer, which they accepted on the spot. We then let them finish the work, do all the civil works and the infrastructure, etc. We pulled them up during construction and prior to settlement. They tried to answer that by saying, we'll let you out of the contract and we'll sell it. You don't have to complete. We knew we'd bought well based on the price we'd negotiated, you know, 18 months earlier. But we chose to continue. There were some faults. They said they'd fix them. They never did. They said, let's see what happens when it rains. We're talking about a tropical area. We've just seen a cyclone go through that same town and devastate it. Worse than any other they've ever had, I think. When it rains there, it can really rain. And in January of 2005, they got 36 inches in 30 hours. Well, that's when we found out that some of the drains that were meant to go in by the contractors and developers, they just left them out because it was a bit too expensive. And they'd put other ones in different locations because it was cheaper to do that. And they took a few other shortcuts. So the short story is the roads and hillside moved away from each other. So the road separated from the hill. The retaining walls that they put in didn't work because the drains didn't work. Now, we'd sold two blocks during this period. We, as I said, we bought for $250,000 a block. We bought 12 of the 17 blocks in the estate because they'd sold the other five to people overseas. And we had sold one for $500,000, which was double. And the other one for $625,000. And then I was chairman of the whole thing that was running the estate. I had to close the whole estate down because it was too dangerous for people to go on.
Wow. So
you had quite a
lot of invested interest in this one, especially that many blocks.
Definitely did. I had investors in this with me, so we formed a syndicate, unit trust, etc. So it was at the beginning and up until this weather event, it was a good deal. And we'd sold two and we'd proved the concept that we'd done well and there was no other land available. These developers took 18 months of our life while they fluffed around and misled us by saying that they were on it. They had their engineers, they had their engineers' reports, and more people were doing this and checking and checking and checking. And then I got a letter from their lawyers, Minter Allison, to say, bad luck, you're on your own. Our developers, our clients got no responsibility. See ya. So we now hold the record for the largest mediation hearing in Supreme Court history in Queensland.
In this situation, Lee says that he has learned from his property investing tragedy, regretting that he speculated on so many blocks of land.
We've tried to sell blocks at a reasonable price. And, you know, the other problem is that during the last 10 years, there's been other estates be developed and opened up and sold. And we couldn't whilst we were going through all the dramas. And then we had to rebuild the entire estate. So we got enough money out of the mediation hearing. So it was a multi-million dollar settlement to strip the entire estate back to ground zero and start again. But that was another 18 months, 2 years of work. Probably if I had learned that speculation and gambling are the same thing, just spelled differently, if I had learned that before we went down that path, we wouldn't have taken every available block. We wouldn't have speculated.
The moment everything shifted for Lee was when he realised the ability to make intelligent and informed decisions about where he should be purchasing property.
I bought two studio units in a little suburb called New Farm, which is the same as our Balmain. A very inner city suburb, same peninsula as Balmain is. It's got everything, same demographic, the lot. And I bought those so cheaply that I was very congratulatory to myself. And I was more impressed with the fact that they were giving me about a 10% gross annual rental yield from day one, which was unheard of. Even the guy in the bank didn't know you could do such a thing.
Yeah, well, that is.
And on the back of those two, I bought a three-bedroom house in a very far western Brisbane suburb. It was actually northwest, but it was more like our Mount Druitt here in Sydney. I bought a three-bedroom house on a block of land for $40,000.
Wow.
Which was rented for $120 a week.
Yeah, that's easily positive cash flow there.
15% from day one.
Yeah.
Now, the only silly things I've ever done are sold that house probably 10 years ago. But it wasn't silly what we did with it. It was just silly that we sold it, I guess. But we sold it in one day for $210,000.
Despite all of Lee's struggles with property investment woes in the past, now he's excited about the opportunities for his clients that he gets to see through his business at Smart Property Advisor.
I still see thousands of opportunities every day. I think people have got to start to look at why they would like to invest in property. And I think if they're chasing capital growth because their ego and greed's got them and they think they're going to be a hero when they sell, et cetera, they need to rethink that about what's coming down the track as far as how are they going to survive when they, you know, finish their working life, if they go into retirement mode, et cetera, et cetera. They need income. And I think if they're going to speculate on capital growth only as being the driver, they might get a very, very serious wake-up call when it doesn't go right or it doesn't go as well as they would expect. Because there are so many variables, there's so many things, so many risk factors that you've got no control over as an individual. Most people don't understand that we had interest rates at 17 and 18% not that long ago, you know, back in, I'd say, 20 years ago maybe. But the average home loan in Sydney then was $100,000. The average home loan now in Sydney is over $700,000.
That's right.
Now, I can tell you now that 7% as a loan, as a home loan rate, 7% is the tipping point where most people in this city will lose their homes. That's a very low number.
Inspired by Kevin Lee's property investing journey, we'll continue the conversation going in a future podcast episode on property investory. We'll talk about how to apply the strategy.
Well, I figured out that I needed to buy properties that would pay for themselves, and I might have to cover some council and water and strata levies and all that sort of stuff on the way through.
Discover Lee's success habits for property investing.
You know, that's really the difference between real success or pretense. Is it's, if it doesn't get you out of bed and doesn't drive you every day, then it's not real.
And that's next time on a future episode of Property Investory. Also, I would love to hear from you. If you have any questions, feedback, or want to share your story, send me an email to hello@propertyinvestory.com and let's start a conversation. Thanks for listening.